listening to the 40s Project podcast, with no catchphrases, no cheesy quotes, just a couple of average country chicks keeping it real, raw, and sometimes risque. Coming up on today's episode, we talk about being back on the shelf in the country, saying farewell to the people-pleasing stage, and the liberation of knowing that what other people think and say about us is none of our goddamn business.
A friend of ours sent you, Abby, the link to a podcast that she thought you might like.
I do too, actually.
And it's hosted by Nellie Thomas and Kate Mulholland, and it's called The Single Life of Us. Go and check it out. It's gone bonkers on the charts and has really struck a chord with many women who have found themselves back on the shelf. You're kind of back on the shelf.
Well, so to speak.
We were fortunate enough to catch up with Nellie and have a good old chin wag.
We are fangirling a little bit.
Thank you.
Stop it.
You are an award-winning Australian comedian and podcaster. You've been all over the world stage doing stand-up. You were a regular on Breakfast Radio and a range of popular podcasts, and you've been listed as one of the country's most innovative thinkers.
Isn't that funny? Geez, that doesn't say much about Australia's capacity for thinkers, does it?
And so here you are talking to a couple of average country moles from the middle of buttfuck nowhere. How did that happen?
Well, given you've got my CV in front of you, you know I was born in the middle of buttfuck nowhere.
Yeah.
I was born in the week that would
be right. Oh. Well, I don't have to read that. I can tell. I don't know. There's something about your twang.
We did actually say before we started, it's like, does Nellie come from the country? There's something, a country feel about her, and that wheat belt is exactly what we're living in. It's very similar.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Flat.
Yeah, it's about halfway between Perth and Kalgoorlie.
Oh, there you go.
So you can imagine it's a tourist destination.
A bit like Balaclava.
Yes, it's it's a through road to nowhere.
Literally.
So your new podcast, that's what got us onto you. So The Single Life of Us, which you do with your friend Kate.
Insert any middle name, Mulholland. Gwendoline should be the next
Gwendoline.
One. It's my mother-in-law's middle name. It's a cracker.
Who of our age doesn't have a middle name?
Yeah, I don't
that's
know.
That's one of the weirdest things about it.
She's a 70s baby.
Yeah.
And
whose parent in our era said, just make up your own?
Seriously.
You and Kate is a podcaster also on Two Peas in a Podcast. How did this amazing podcast start, Single Life of Us?
So the long story short is that both Kate and I got divorced in the last couple of years, and we were friends. So as you would know, in podcast land, you go on someone's podcast, you know, when you click with them, you can often end up going, oh, my God, we should have dinner. You know, so I went on Two Peas in a Podcast, which is a very, very successful podcast. Mm. And then we just went, oh, you're my people. And we became friends. And when I think it was actually literally the week that her marriage ended, she was at my place for dinner. And as we were leaving, we went, oh, maybe we should do something. You know, like maybe we should talk about it. Yeah. Like there's no one talking about being single, you know, in your 40s and 50s and older in any kind of positive way.
No.
You know, like it's always doom and gloom. You'll be lonely. You'll be broke. You'll have a hideous divorce. All those things are true, but there's also a lot of upsides.
Mm. Oh, so, yeah.
We wanted to talk about that.
I love it. I'm 40 last year, newly single after a 23-year relationship. So a great friend and a local photographer, Kath Leo, put me onto The Single Life of Us. And, well, you pegged yourself in a bit, though, because I reckon anybody could laugh at it. You don't have to be single to listen
to you guys. Oh, I enjoy
it,
and I'm married. Mm-hmm. I'm happily married most of the time. Today I'm just married, but... but, yeah, it's entertaining for everyone, and it's, you know...
One of the lovely things, and I'm sure you find this with yours as well, is like you sort of start out thinking, oh, this is the demographic, and then you're wrong, you know? Like we get like a lot of the thing I love most probably is the so many listeners in their 20s, whether they're single or in couples, kind of going, oh, I want to listen to older people who have been through, I don't know, who have walked a path that I'm going to walk.
Yeah.
Whether they end up in relationships, divorce or whatever, it's just that kind of idea of listening to someone older with a bit more life experience. You know, one young guy, for example, who's like 24 and recently divorced, and he messaged us and said, I was with my ex-wife the other day and our daughter, and I was feeling really angry, and I said to myself, no, be friendly, not friends, which is something we talk about on the podcast. Like, you don't have to be best friends, but you do have to be friendly and civil if you can for the sake of your children.
Yeah.
So even the idea of him kind of just going, like, he's supposedly not in our demographic. He's like, I'm learning from people maybe with a bit more life experience. It's cool.
And I think having people with life experience that are also so real and honest and able to get that message across is invaluable.
Well, thank you. I mean, look, you know what it's like. You make something, you put it out in the world. My philosophy has always been, and it's the same with my kids' books, it's the same with pretty much all the shows I've ever done. It's like there's something that I can't find in the ether or the market that I want, so I'll do it and then see if other people want it. And sometimes I've done podcasts where, you know, no one listens.
Yeah, right.
You know, in kind of numerical terms, but I still think it was great.
Yeah.
You know, it just means that this one has landed in a space and time where it seems to be needed.
And tell us how, well, like, we know how good it is, but tell us how good it is. Like, obviously, you've gotten, it's already hit, one of the top 20 podcasts. Tell us what it's done in this short time, 100,000 downloads.
Yeah, like, it's, I mean, for me, I have literally done radio shows that less people listen to.
Yeah.
You know, so, and I say that not to brag, but because I'm surprised.
Yeah.
You know, like I thought, okay, there'll be some people who'll find this sort of comforting and funny. But even we are surprised at how many people are really connecting with it.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I think we're up to, I don't know, nearly 200,000 downloads now, which blows my mind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We've been on the telly and radio and, you know, that doesn't happen. There's so many, you know this, I know this from my other podcasts. There's so many podcasts it's hard to get traction, you know, outside the podcast world. But I think it's because there is this really, really prevailing narrative that to be a single woman over 40 is shit.
Yeah,
pretty much. And your life is fucked. Yeah.
And your life is fucked. And it's actually relieved, people are relieved to hear Kate and I go, oh, these bits are hard, but shit, this bit's fun.
Yeah. Well, you yesterday only said to me, I don't really envy you. As I'm going home to my farmer husband and kids, she's like,
it's pretty new for me. And yeah, I said that, you know, one of my biggest concerns was regret. And I said, I'm not there, and in fact, I don't even envy you. Even though Melissa's got a lovely husband.
I think one of the things that is really taboo to say about separation at any time, but particularly in middle age if you have children, is that for a lot of people, men and women, there's an unspoken truth that there's relief.
Mm.
You know, it's not all, yes, there's grief, yes, there can be pain, there can be heartache. But for a lot of people, there's also relief at kind of going, I know it wasn't working.
Yeah.
They know it wasn't working. And thank fuck we're not pretending anymore.
Yeah.
You know, like a weight off your shoulders.
It's so many different emotions, but the only one that comes to my head right now is liberation.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's great. And you know what? It's okay to say that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that's, to me, that's the reason that the podcast has hit a nerve, because you don't sit at Christmas dinner and say, I got divorced this year and I feel liberated.
You know? Yeah.
But truthfully, we actually should do that, because that is the truth for a lot of people of all genders, to kind of go, if something's not working, whether it's a bad job, whether it's a relationship that's not working, whether it's a friendship that's not serving you anymore, whether it's a family relationship, whatever it is, you're allowed to leave.
Yeah.
Oh, it's simple as that. You're allowed to leave.
Yes, and although it's hard for those around you and the kids and everything, at the end of the day, you're still conveying that message that is it is okay to change, leave, make a different choice.
Has any of your listeners had any good tips? Because you're a country girl. We live in the country. Yeah. There's already been a few rumours and innuendo as to what Abby's been up to.
Yeah.
So that leap into, you know, maybe when you're ready, that leap into a new partnership or whatever is a whole different ballgame when you're thinking rurally and everyone knows your business anyway. Have you had any, you know, feedback from listeners about how they've handled that stuff or any tips?
I think it varies a lot, and I think it depends where you are at in your own, I mean, this sounds grandiose, but, you know, your own self-esteem, your own sense of who you are. Or for me, if this had happened to me 10 years ago, I would have been fucked,
mm-hmm.
right, because I would have been still in what I call my people-pleasing phase where I really worried, you know, especially as, quite frankly, a country girl, you know, I had more than 100 cousins. I was in a little town. Everyone's up in your grill. They're comes a point, and for me it was around 40, maybe early 40s, where I started to go, why am I trying to please people that don't try and please me?
Mm-hmm.
You know? Like,
I think most women find that realization in their 40s. I'm at the other end of 40, like I'm 47, you're 41. I'm like, it just gets better.
I really do think that happened, like the stroke of the clock that I turned 40. Like, I literally felt this change and I went, what am I doing? And usually, like, I mean, what's happened for me in the last half a year, usually, you know, having people thinking those things or those things being said would just eat me up. And, you know, because apparently I've had sex with my own nephew.
Right.
Yeah, and this week... Yeah, this week my teen daughter's been...
she's been molested.
She's been molested, and that's why I've broken up with my husband. Yes.
It's crazy. Shit.
So once upon a time that'd have me rocking back and forth in the bathroom, but all I can do at 41 is laugh and go, you dickheads.
Yeah. Oh, look, I mean, it is... I mean, there's a couple of things that come to mind for me. They're just like mantras or catchphrases that I've heard that when I'm going through something like that, I repeat to myself. One is, what other people think of me is none of my business.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Right? Mm-hmm. So I actually wish, like, be like a normal fucking person and gossip behind my back.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. That's what everyone does, isn't it? Like, yeah. Exactly. Well,
if I'm ridding the neighbour, don't tell the other neighbour. Yes. Get me out of it. You know, have fun. By all means, go with God, right? But I don't need to know about it. But the other thing on a more serious level is, and this was profoundly life-changing for me, and I think it's especially important in a small community of any kind, never, ever, ever seek respect from people you don't respect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So if that fuckers a damn at the IGA going, oh, my God, and she had sex with her nephew and I think they left her the door, do you respect them? Do you respect how they live their life? Do you think that they are intelligent, kind, compassionate people? No. Then off you fuck.
Yes. Almost said it with you. Yeah.
Come on, man.
Yeah.
How many years did I spend, and I'm sure you two have done this, I feel like all women have done it, but it's concentrated when you're in a small community, trying to get the person in the community who's the loud gossip shithead, please like me. Please like me. Like, now I just kind of go, I don't fucking like you.
Yeah.
What am I doing? This is insanity. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's the liberation.
Yeah.
When you actually kind of can laugh at them and go, how sad for you that you are wasting your time talking about a complete, you might as well read New Idea.
Yeah, basically. It's actually crazy.
It is.
Anyway.
Yeah. But. Yeah, I'm certainly glad I am in this phase of my life where I can laugh at it and go and not even try to defend myself. If you want to believe that, then happy days to you.
Yeah. And you've got a good tribe. I think that women tribe has Your stars aligned for you. Mm-hmm. You said, I've got enough empowerment. I'm, you know, my kids are a bit older. I've got a good women tribe around to know that, you know, to
make that management committee. They are shit, they're my management committee.
Well, and if you know who you are, that's the liberation of getting older. Once you know who you are, who other people think you are is much less important.
Yeah.
So, for example, when I first started in stand-up, I'd get reviews and I'd read them and I'd pore over them. And then it took me, like, probably once I had my daughter, actually, once I became a mum and things like that seemed so much less relevant, I'm like, the only people reading that are other comedians. And also, the guy who wrote it is the fucking car guy from the Herald Sun. He's never been to a comedy show in his life. You know, like, why am I pouring? It's so insignificant.
Yeah.
And that's because I was stronger and I was more confident. I knew I was a good stand-up.
Mm.
Doesn't mean I'm the best in the world. Doesn't mean I'm the best in show. But I know I'm good at what I do.
Yeah.
So his view of my show doesn't matter.
Yeah.
That's right. And, you know, the old cliche, you know, you might be the juiciest peach on the tree, but not everyone likes peaches.
No one's going to be liked by everyone.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, one of the really, excuse me, stop it. Sorry, there's three dogs here. It's
I was going to say, do you need to go get the neighbour's dog as well?
Oh, can you hear another dog barking?
I can see one now.
Oh, sorry. One of the other really interesting things from the podcast, I reckon, is that we get, you know, say traditionally really hot people, you know, usually women but not always, who are, you know, size 10 and 6 foot tall and, you know, Jerry Hall types who are like, oh, I'm too old and I'm too fat and I'm too – and you realise the physical reality is nothing to do with how you feel.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like you can be – I have never been – fatter in my life. I'm obviously older than I've ever been, obviously. And I feel more attractive at 48 than I have probably in my entire life.
Yeah, inner self.
And inner self, it's like it's from the inside out.
Mm-hmm.
It's from the inside out. And that is a really, I wish I could teach my daughters that.
And we were also talking about yesterday, we heard Kate on one of your episodes talk about how sometimes all the good guys aren't the dating app. Sometimes they're at the tip. And I said, like, you know, theoretically, I've never been to the tip, live on a farm, do that shit ourselves. But theoretically, I said, if I've been to the tip for the last 23 years and I don't even notice anyone or no one notices me, but now if I go to the tip... it's on like Donkey Kong. What's happening?
I think your pheromones have gone nuts or something.
No, that's actually true. That's another really surprising thing, I think. Once you start dating or once you start, particularly when you've been in a long-term relationship and then you're back in the game, you emit a vibe.
Yes.
I mean, mate, like I am getting hit on more than I have in my entire life.
And I'm not even babbing.
No, no babbing involved.
Oh my God. You know what I mean? Like there's something about it's like charisma. You know, it's like seeing a performer where you kind of go, I don't know why you're good, but I'm hanging on every word.
Yeah.
It's the same in dating. It's like someone walks into a room, they don't have to be the hottest, they don't have to be the youngest or the thinnest or any of the things. They hold themselves in a way that you go, ooh, hello.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on, but life certainly changed, I'll tell you that.
I love it.
As a comedian, do you watch stand-up? And who would be your favourite? Or can you say that?
Do I watch stand-up? It's funny. I don't watch sitcoms, which really surprises people. But when I watch it, and I don't watch, like, stand-up on TV.
Okay.
I don't, because I watch it critically.
Ah, okay.
You know, I'm not actually in the moment enjoying it. I'm watching it sort of technically.
Yeah. Do you think watching it then sometimes affects, like, your content? You think, oh, then you feel like maybe when you're writing your stuff that you're stealing almost because it's sort of in your head somewhere?
No, not really, it's the opposite where I'm going, I would have done that different.
Ah, okay.
You know, when you sit and watch it and kind of go, oh, you missed that bit.
Yeah.
You know, that's what I mean by watching it critically. Like, you're not actually watching and enjoying it. Mm. Whereas I find if I'm in the room, I'm more able to do that.
Okay.
Because you're caught up in the sort of atmosphere of the other people being present and, you know, there's a group kind of feeling. So I can detach more and just actually sit there and enjoy it. But doing, TV and things like that, I watch it like a critic.
Mm. Wow. You know,
so that's not fun.
Yeah, no. Yeah. Oh.
But who, I mean, I loved back in the day, probably the biggest influence for me was Roseanne.
Oh, yes.
She's become very problematic.
Yes, she has, hasn't she?
You know, back in the day for someone like me, like a working class country girl, she was the only woman I saw on TV that looked anything like anyone I knew.
Yep.
And we had a house or a family that was anything like mine.
Yeah.
So I could really relate to their family, even the fact that they had a shit couch, you know, that they would have, you know, the kind of food they ate, the, you know, it's class stuff. Really?
Yeah.
So I absolutely loved her. There's a guy in Melbourne, which no one will know. He's not, like, super well known. But I love – there's a guy called Oliver Clark that I love. And the reason I love him is because my comedy's really sort of cerebral and a bit up yourself and, you know, political. And, like, my first set I did was on refugees.
Oh, wow.
You know, like,
okay.
I can't help it. I've kind of embraced that now. That's just who I am and I'm okay with it. I used to apologise for it. But I love, like, Oliver, he'll just, like, put a doily on the ground and go, "Ooh, everything looks better on a doily."
That's actually funny. Like,
you know what I mean? Like, for me, it's so different from what I do.
Yeah.
But I don't sit there and critique it or think I would do it differently or anything. I just laugh and laugh. It's stupid.
Simple.
Yeah. It's simple. It's fun, you know. So, I mean, of course, I love Judith Lucy, like almost all, you know, she's such a trailblazer, and Rachel Berger and Wendy Harmer and people like that.
Yeah.
I love Chris Rock.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of those, like, technically, from a technical point of view, I don't think there's a better joke writer than him. But mostly, I like charisma.
Yeah.
I'm drawn to, even if someone's not the best technical writer, I just like someone who's really, that you can't stop looking at.
Mm-hmm. We did a survey, ironically, in the last week or two about whether the word mole is spelt M-O-L-E or M-O-L-L, and then we come across your book, Some Mums Are Fat Moles.
And I think I'm a fat mole.
Well, we think we're fat moles. And you've gone with the double L. So tell us, double L, is that your story? And are we fat mole mums?
Well, you have to self-identify. I would never identity on anybody. But, yeah, to me, M-O-L is the animal. But Kate and I have this argument constantly because she spells it M-O-L-E, but I'm like, fuck yeah, I wrote the book. So.
We said to write M-O-L-E. But then we've got a teacher friend who's all very, what did he say? It's a derivative of Molly, which is a euphemism for a hooker. And so that's why it's M-O-L-L.
So correct. So, Mole is, you've heard it here, your book is correct, it's M-O-L-L.
Oh, mate, I need no convincing.
So can you tell us a bit about that book?
Yeah, so that was a lockdown project. So I'd written several kids' books before that, and I, you know, they're one of the great joys of my career. Like, I get amazing feedback, and just, you know, they're heart projects, like they're projects for love that I just am so, like, I just love them, and I love the what they represent and the feedback. Like, it's so different than being a stand-up, you know, working in that space. But I also got to that point, I think it was in lockdown, where I went, oh, I want to just be rude. You know, I want to be a mum. I don't want to be a mum all the time. Yeah. I want to be a comedian. I want to be an adult. I want to be a woman. And the first ever heckle I got on stage in 2002 was, "You fat mole." Uh-huh. And I'd always thought, I'm going to do something with that. I'm going to do something with that. And I really think, culturally, we've got a long way to go. Part of the reason that women find divorce hard, I think, is because we are then put back into the position of being sexual beings again. You're on the market. You're on the market. And we're not comfortable with mothers liking sex and drinking and going out on their own. And, you know, this idea that a woman can be a mother and also independent from her children is still radical.
And say come.
Correct. Swear, all those sort of things. So for me it was just that of kind of going, shit, I wish someone had given me that. You know, when I had little kids especially, to kind of go, no, you're still yourself. You're allowed to be an adult. Just because you're a mother doesn't mean that your mothers are infantilized, ironically. Like, we're not children. We're allowed to swear.
Yeah, we do.
Have sex, drink, and do all those things. Mm-hmm. So that's what that, and hopefully it's funny.
And the early days of motherhood, though, you kind of morph into, this is what I've wanted forever, this is what I want to be, this is how I want my kids, and then they get to teenage and you go, fuck that, didn't work.
Yeah.
We quite often have a drink at the pub and talk about what Nellie and Kate have been up to. And we look forward to the linen range and perhaps even the...
The mug, off your fuck mug.
The vibrating, talking Kelly.
No, that'll be a good one. I think we'll go with off your fuck mugs and tea towels with woo me motherfucker. If you want access to this jelly, you put a bit, better put in some effort.
That is great.
Love it, love it.
All right, well...
Thanks so much.
Thank you, and... you can go and tend to your dogs and off you fuck, Nellie.
So no, off you fuck.